You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Photoshop Effect. What constitutes a legitimate variation of a martial arts technique, and why it matters. Here's a question for serious martial artists. How many variations are there of the left hook? The round kick? The hip throw? The arm bar? Or the fencing lunge? Such questions have stirred debate in martial arts circles for generations. For example, let's look at, arguably, the most important punch in boxing, the jab. It has a number of variations. There's the speed jab, the power jab, the flicking jab, the defensive jab, the entering jab, the stepping jab, and more besides. By the way, the names for the techniques that I'm using aren't universal among coaches. Most instructors would have their own names for these variations, and some of them might even be jerks about it. But I'm going to cover the subject of terminology Nazis in a future podcast. The subject today is not what you name a variation, but instead what constitutes a legitimate variation, or if there even is such a thing. Anyway, the concept of how many variations exist is used not only as a subject for debate, but also as fuel for what I call padding the curriculum. Let me give you an example. Back in the late 70s, I knew another martial arts instructor who proudly proclaimed, both personally and in his advertising copy, that he knew more than 2,000 kicks. How is that possible? Was he lying? Well, yes and no, but in my opinion, mostly yes. If you are a martial artist who employs kicking techniques, how many kicks do you think you know and use? For example, let's look at the side kick. Drawing from arts like Taekwondo, Savate, Capoeira, and Harimau, you can throw the side kick with many different types of footwork and movement, some demanding more athleticism than others, and some more practical than others. Okay, strap in and listen. There is the cross-step sidekick, the slide-up sidekick, the skip sidekick, the burst sidekick, the short skip sidekick, the stationary defensive sidekick, the rear leg sidekick, the spinning sidekick. No, I will not be drawn into a silly argument about whether it should be called the spinning sidekick or the spinning back kick. Now back to the list. The jumping sidekick. The jumping spinning sidekick. The 360-degree jumping spinning sidekick. The jumping rear leg sidekick. The lying sidekick. The kneeling sidekick. The spinning kneeling sidekick. The tripod sidekick. And the spinning tripod sidekick. That's 17 variations to begin with. Each of these can be thrown at different altitudes on the opponent's body. Depending on how granular you want to get, you can select from a large number of gradations for the height for your kick. But let's limit it to low, middle, and high. These three altitudes, combined with the 17 variations, now yield 51 versions of the sidekick. Now, if I were to claim that there are 51 different kinds of sidekick, you may well call me crazy. And you would be right. But you would be right for reasons that have nothing to do with today's podcast, and which I can't discuss because of the restraining order. What was I talking about? Oh, yes, of course. The mental gymnastics which my old martial arts colleague engaged in order to come up with 2,000 kicks, are, of course, silly. You have a simple technique like my example, the sidekick, and different effects that you can generate through different types of movement, aimed at different levels of target. In my opinion, any debate about how many variations there are of any given technique is misleading, pointless, and more importantly, not helpful for the learning process. Such arguments are really just a form of unnecessary semantic gymnastics, taking up time that would be better spent emulating those who practice real gymnastics. That at least would be time well spent in a useful form of conditioning. While it's important to have a logical taxonomy, or hierarchical structured list of basic techniques, to pad it in this way to make yourself look as if you know more than someone else does nothing to advance the state of martial arts technology. So rather than engaging in silly bickering over, metaphorically speaking, how many samurai can dance on the point of a katana, I prefer to conceptualize this question in a different way. In a very real sense, there are an infinite number of variations of every possible technique. Permit me to explain. I'll begin by drawing an analogy to commercially available computer software. There exist innumerable programs for editing and modifying content, be it text, audio, video, or still pictures. Each of these products feature a wide variety of user-friendly tools and options for the manipulation of content. One example of this is Photoshop. With Photoshop, or with any other image editing software, you can alter your photographs with so many tools, in so many different ways, that you can essentially come up with an infinite number of possible variations of the original snapshot. You can enlarge or reduce it, apply filters, tint it, transform it to black and white or sepia-tone, crop it, enhance the digital image, and use many other possible effects. In some cases, to execute one of these changes, you use a graphic sliding control that elegantly expresses a mathematical relationship between two ends of a spectrum of effects. This allows you to replace the tedious task of using pencil and paper to calculate the correct number with the simple act of sliding a virtual lever back and forth and observing the results before choosing where on that spectrum you want the effect to land. Since you can select any one of a large range of discrete settings from any one of a large number of controls, right there you have a near infinite number of possible variations. I find this to be an apt analogy for, I hope, eloquently expressing the way I think the question of how many variations of a martial arts technique there are can be more clearly framed. All you need to do is imagine the various kinds of effects that you can generate with any given martial arts technique and apply them in every case to gain the precise version of the technique you need. The essence here is to learn that to gain an effect, you must give up something. Let's imagine our own computer software. But in this case, instead of using it to edit content, we'll use it to edit martial arts techniques. Looking at the screen, you see a cool graphic interface, a sciency-looking screenshot depicting an array of tools and controls. Many of these have sliding control knobs that allow you to select a point somewhere along a spectrum. One of these tools bears the label loading. This refers to a concept from the striking arts. In the stance that you assume for striking, you should already be at least partially loaded for a number of strikes. Take the boxing stance, for example. In this stance, your shoulders are not, or at least shouldn't be, squared to the opponent. Instead, your right shoulder, assuming that you are right-handed, should be further away from the opponent than your left shoulder, but not as far away as it can possibly be, because that would eliminate the loading effect for your other hand. This results in a partially loaded position for your right-hand punches. As I said, your left hand is also somewhat loaded, sufficiently for a jab, but not as much as your right hand is. If you were to load both arms equally, your straight punching game might suffer. Your rear hand straight punch would become less powerful, and your lead hand straight punch would be easier to see coming. Getting back to our technique editing software, when the control labeled loading is in the center of its range, your shoulders are in the position I've described for the basic boxing stance. But if you slide the knob to the right, you will rotate the right shoulder even further to the rear, resulting in a position that loads for more power. But the price you pay for it is less quickness. If you slide the knob to the left, you achieve the opposite effect. As I said earlier, when working to achieve a specific effect with a technique, you must often give up something to gain something else. This effect of increasing or decreasing the loading for a given weapon can be applied to any striking technique. It also can frequently be concealed by another movement. You might wish to decrease the amount of loading for a given strike. This particular departure from normal doctrine allows you to turn your rear hand, for example, effectively into your jabbing hand, and sets up your lead hand as the power punch, most commonly using a left hook punch. This concept is sometimes referred to as using a right-hand lead. Thus, the control labeled loading is a spectrum between adding more power at one end and gaining more quickness at the other. Another concept that deserves to have its own control lever on our imaginary graphic interface is immediacy. You see, sometimes the opponent does something that creates an opening, but does so when you are not optimally positioned to take advantage. For example, say you're grappling on the ground with an opponent who is in your closed guard. He does something that drastically degrades his structural base, like sliding one of his knees straight back behind him, extending his leg. If you take the time to set up all the elements of a good sweep, your window of opportunity just might slam shut before you can accomplish the sweep. After all the opponent needs to do to close that window is to bring his knee back where it belongs. In that case, it's sometimes better to do an ugly technique right now than to take the time to make it more closely approach technical perfection. The phrase I use to express this to my students is, timing is sometimes its own technique. So you could consider a sloppy version of a technique done in order to gain immediacy to be at one end of the spectrum, and a technique that is carefully set up and then carefully executed at the other end. Yet another control on our imaginary graphic interface could be labeled commitment. Now, I discussed the concept of commitment in episode number 40 of this podcast series, entitled The 5 Degrees of Commitment. So for a thorough treatment of that subject, please refer to that episode. To put it more succinctly, more commitment with the technique will yield more power. Less commitment makes you less vulnerable to potential counterattacks from the opponent. Techniques with lower levels of commitment are used mostly to cause the opponent to react, creating new openings. Another control on our imaginary graphic interface would carry the label direction of travel. With any striking technique, there can be a wide variety of ways which you move your body's center of mass during the execution of the technique. This is usually accomplished with footwork. You might choose to step directly towards the opponent, and in the process move your center, which is inside your body roughly at the height of your navel and halfway between your belly and back, also directly towards the opponent. This common use of movement adds a great deal of momentum to linear attacks, resulting in more kinetic energy. But if you limit yourself strictly to attacks stepping straight towards the opponent, you make yourself quite predictable, always a bad idea in the martial arts, and you also cut yourself off from many other interesting possibilities. Sometimes you might choose to keep your center of mass stationary during your attack. Other times, you may cut 90 degrees to the right or left, or 45 degrees to any of the 4 diagonal corners of the compass, or to a near infinite number of smaller gradations in between. Hence our graphic control labeled direction of travel. For example, if your attacking limb is not traveling straight towards the opponent up the center line, as is the case with attacks like hook punches, round kicks, and spinning wheel kicks, the direction you wish to move your center for maximum power will be on the same line of travel as the attacking arm or leg. This is why boxing coaches teach you to step to the right with your right foot when throwing a maximally powerful left hook. It's also sometimes functional to move straight away from the opponent as you're attacking. Other possible controls do exist for our graphic interface, but I'm running out of time. They would include choking up your grip on a weapon to gain quickness, as opposed to sliding your grip further down towards the end to add reach and power, or widening out your base for more stability and grappling, as opposed to narrowing your base to make your position less open for the opponent to insert choking arms and hooking legs, and so on, and so on. So you see why I say it can be pointless and silly to debate how many variations exist for any given technique. Instead, I assert that it would be better to learn about and train some of these effects. And if you must spend time discussing this topic, perhaps it might be useful to substitute the word effect for the word variation. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, or check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.